Always glad to welcome back Vice Mayor of Santa Rosa, Chris Rogers, to the show. Good morning, Chris.
Morning, Pat. How you doing?
I am well, and nothing shaking, so I'm happy about that on this anniversary of the Loma Prieta quake, of course, of which you have absolutely no memory,
that's,
right?
That's absolutely true, yeah. Pat.
He's a little young for that, Chris is. But it sounds like an interesting city council meeting yesterday, and I'm hoping that you can shed some light, Chris, on the story about this apartment complex near Cottingtown and about the complicated purchase agreement here.
Yeah, absolutely, Pat. So a few months ago, the city of Santa Rosa joined a joint powers authority called the California Public Finance Authority. And what CalPFA does is they go around and they help purchase housing units that they can then preserve for different affordability levels. As we've talked about many times, we talk a lot about affordable housing, but there's also this missing middle for folks who make between 80% and 120% of the area's median income. That is difficult for them because it's slightly below market for folks to actually produce. What this JPA does is they actually go and purchase some of those units, deed restrict them into that 80% to 120%
right.
area median income level, and they preserve those units over the course of up to about 30 years. Where it gets interesting for Santa Rosa is by partnering with them, if they are 15 years in or later, the city will have the option of purchasing those units from this JPA.
Okay, so
the proposal is about 300 units that are already out there to purchase them and preserve them as affordable.
And I think one of the things that's striking about this, you've already pointed out, Chris, is the median income part of this. Because, as you said, we are accustomed to trying desperately to find affordable housing for a lot of people. But you're right. There is that gap in between those that can't afford and those that can't. And it's pretty tough for those stuck in the middle.
That's right. And it's the inevitable question when we start to talk about affordable housing, Pat, is for who? Who is it affordable for?
Yeah.
And I have heard constituents who have said repeatedly, clearly everything's affordable if there's no production, if there is no availability, that means somebody can afford it. And while there's some truth to that, that doesn't help us when it comes to our workers who are struggling to stay in the community because they don't make above the area median income. So what we look at is preserving affordability at lower ends of the economic spectrum and at the middle section of the economic spectrum as well.
Because you really need all of those workers to stay in town at every
That's right.
level of income to make this workable community moving forward. That makes sense to me. What else was the big topic du jour at the meeting yesterday?
We also heard a 3.5 hour long appeal for a cannabis manufacturing plant that is going into one of our industrial areas, but with a little bit of a twist, Pat. Due to zoning, the way that we have zoned manufacturing, not just for cannabis, but for other things as well, it actually was right up against the neighborhood on the backside, separated by a hedge and two fences. But still within about 100 feet or about 60 feet of that neighborhood. And as we go through this rollout of legalization and what
yeah.
that means for us as a community, we're going to continue to have some of these conflicts moving forward. And anybody who has studied land use planning will tell you, Pat, that when you have industrial space in the maturation of a city, inevitably it arises conflicts with housing. And what ends up happening time and time again is industrial space is pushed out for housing. That's not a healthy thing for the city. What we were trying to do is figure out how we could move forward, allowing this manufacturing business to go in while also still maintaining the safety of the neighborhood and helping the neighbors to feel safe as well. So it was a pretty lengthy meeting with a
yeah.
lot of sausage making from the dais.
Yeah, no kidding. And that is, it's, and hopefully it will become less and less of a tug of war as we get more and more used to this. But talking about a manufacturing plant, cannabis manufacturing plant here, Chris, of course, we're all kind of surprised and taken aback by the fact that in Canada, recreational marijuana is legal across the nation where it is not here. And speaking of money, according to the Canadian business plan, they're expecting that revenues from recreational pot will exceed $8 billion a year by 2020 in Canada alone. So just to give you an idea about what potential there is in terms of recreational marijuana once a country legalizes it across the board.
And we expect the same thing here, Pat. We've seen economic studies that have shown that cannabis is probably going to provide more in terms of tax revenue than even the wine industry when it's up and running. And it brings, with the manufacturing jobs, good, high-paying jobs to our region as well. The real issue is, one, the fact that you have to use cash,
yeah,
which creates a bit of a risk for the business. And then, two, familiarity with the cannabis industry as a whole. Most people are more familiar with the illegal grows, the stories about illegal grows, and some of the crime element that's around those, and not so much around what a fully legalized, regulated, and running business looks like and what it does to neighborhoods. It'll take us some time, and it sucks to be first, Pat. And quite frankly, that's what this was last night. But I think the community is going to get used to this and see that if done correctly and with all of the safety regulations put in by the state and by the city, that this is going to be safe and actually a good thing for our community.
Yeah, it does suck to be first in this particular regard, because you have to go through all of the pratfalls that the community next to you won't have to go through because you've already done that. But of course, you know, in some ways there's a capper on all of this until such time as America at large says, "Yep, we're all for it. Let's have recreational marijuana," because the bank issue remains.
Yeah, and I will tell you, Pat, talking with some of the businesses that are starting to sprout up in Sonoma County or that want to come in here, there is also a sense of a lot of pressure to do this well. Because, as you said, not all of the country is as forthright about their cannabis policies as we are. And if we do it well, we know it'll be adopted elsewhere. And if we do it poorly, we know that there'll be the example that'll be pointed to say, don't allow this in our community.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. There's great responsibility there. Interesting, though, there is a similar vein running through this issue and all of the efforts that are being made here when it comes to wildfire recovery, because a lot of the things that are being done as a result of our efforts to recover are being modeled and copied elsewhere too.
It's true, Pat. I think between what we're doing with cannabis, what we're doing with rebuild, and how we are addressing our housing crisis and being willing and able to try new things and take risks and possibly fail, I think it has also put Santa Rosa and Sonoma County more broadly on the map when it comes to other councils and other board of supervisors who are looking for solutions that they can try.
Yep, that's it. And those are the great things and the challenging things about being first in any particular thing, especially two issues that are as important as these are. And Chris, thanks so much for being here this morning. Always appreciate it. Less than 3 weeks to go before the midterms.
Absolutely, Pat. You take care.
All right, take care. That is Vice Mayor of Santa Rosa, Chris Rogers, talking about cannabis, housing, and other things, too.